Good morning. I'm Reverend Ralph Tiksinski, and I'm so happy to be with you this morning on this rather chilly day, but the sun is shining, and that makes all the difference for us. The Free Congregation of Sauk County is a Unitarian Universalist Fellowship and a welcoming congregation. This means that our invitation is to all, that all here are welcome, regardless of race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender expression, or political persuasion. This morning, I'm going to be providing a reflection on the life of Albert Schweitzer. I call this, What Can Albert Schweitzer Teach Us Today? Now, this past January, the world reached a remarkable milestone, the 150th anniversary of the birth of Albert Schweitzer. He was born in 1875 in that borderland country, Alsace, between Germany and France. When he was born, Alsace was part of Germany. But then after World War I, it reverted and became part of France. He was bilingual. He spoke and read and studied both German and French. Schweitzer was a man who seemed to live five lifetimes in the span of one. If you look at his early scholarly career, it's almost intimidating. He was a world-class theologian. He was a philosopher. He was a virtuoso organist and the leading authority on the music of Johann Sebastian Bach. He was a writer and eventually became a humanitarian physician. As his biographers often joke, the man pretty much didn't sleep. But to understand Schweitzer, we have to look past the list of titles. We have to look at a radical decision he made in 1913. Imagine this renowned European intellectual at the height of his fame deciding to walk away from the lecture halls of the University of Strasbourg and the concert halls of Europe. He chose instead to travel to Equatorial West Africa to treat patients in a hot, malaria-infested jungle. Why? Why would a man with a world at his feet defy his friends, his mentors, and his family to serve people whose language he didn't know and whose religious beliefs he didn't share? The answer can be found in his autobiography, Out of My Life and Thought. He says, one brilliant summer morning in Gunsbach during the Whitsuntide holidays, it was close to 1986, as I awoke, the thought came to me that I must not accept the good fortune as a matter of course, but must give something in return. While outside the birds sang, I reflected on this thought. And before I had gotten up, I came to the conclusion that until I was 30, I consider myself justified in devoting myself to scholarship and the arts. But after that, I would devote myself directly to serving humanity. I had already tried many times to find the meaning that lay hidden in the sayings of Jesus. Whosoever would save his life shall lose it. And whoever shall lose his life for me, for my sake, and the Gospels shall save it. Now I had found the answer. I could now add outward to inward happiness. Schweitzer wasn't a man of blind faith. From his youth, he was plagued by questions. While preparing for his confirmation in the Lutheran Church, he couldn't wrap his head around how the Bible could be literally true when his teachers told him he must simply take it on faith. He rebelled. He once wrote, I was convinced, and I am still so, that the fundamental principles of Christianity have to be proved true by reasoning. Reason has been given us that way so that we may bring everything within the range of its action. Now, this commitment to reason led him to write this famous scholarly study, The Quest of the Historical Jesus, a book that shook the foundations of theology and New Testament scholarship by looking at Jesus through a historical rather than a dogmatic lens. He pared Christianity down until only the pure, unadulterated nugget remained, and the words and lives of Jesus summed up in the command to love God and neighbor. But by the age of 30, even with all his success, Schweitzer felt a deep spiritual unrest. He loved preaching, he loved playing the organ, and he was a masterful at it. And he played in cathedrals and concert halls all over Europe for over 60 years. He recorded he was recorded by Columbia Records in the 30s, and those recordings are still considered masterpiece recordings. But somehow, with all of this fame, Schweitzer still felt a disconnect between his head and his hands. He felt that the church of his time was too often a privileged institution that evaded the ethical implications and applications of its own teachings. He famously told his American friend, Norman Cousins. Norman Cousins was the editor and publisher of the Saturday Review of Books. Yeah. And he said to Cousins, "I decided that I would make my life my argument. I would make my life my argument." In 1904, Schweitzer read an article about the needs of the Congo Mission by the Parish Missionary Society. It described people devastated by diseases, malaria, sleeping sickness, and leprosy. Those were diseases that were not being treated by modern medicine. The need was desperate for people to answer a call to serve the suffering native people of that region. Schweitzer answered the call. His search was over. He then worked and studied from 1905 to become a medical from 1905 to 1912 to become a medical doctor. In other words, he gave all of that scholarly work. He said, "I'm going to do this service and serve those in Africa, but I need to become a medical doctor in order to do that." And he then went to medical school, specializing in tropical diseases and illnesses. During this period, he met the love of his life, Helena Breslau, who had been training as a nurse there in Strasbourg. And they were married in June 18th, 1912. For Schweitzer, this wasn't just a charity project. It was an act of atonement. In a 1905 sermon, he said that we must make atonement for the, quote, terrible crimes committed in the shadows of the jungle night. His mission wasn't to convert the savages, as many missionaries of that era thought. It was to try to right the wrongs that white Europeans had inflicted upon black Africans. He writes, "It was because I relied on the elementary truth embodied in this idea, the brotherhood of those who bear the mark of pain, that I ventured to found the Forest Hospital at Lambarini." Finally, I must insist that whatever benefit we confer upon the people of our colonies is not charity, but atonement for the terrible sufferings we white people have inflicted upon them ever since the day our first ship found its way to their shores. The colonial problems that exist today cannot be solved by political measures alone. A new element must be introduced. White and black must meet in an atmosphere infused with an ethical spirit. Only then will communication be possible. And he spent 50 years in West Africa. He didn't just practice medicine. He built his hospital with his own hands. He was a doctor. He was the architect, the fundraiser, and the laborer who built that hospital to care for those in need. It was during this time, while traveling on a river, the Ogowe River, in 1915, that he struck upon the phrase that would define his legacy: reverence for life. This wasn't just about being kind to people. It was an ecological and spiritual realization that the, quote, neighbor we are told to love extends beyond our friends, beyond our race, and even beyond the human species to encompass all living things. He was practicing ecology decades before it was a common household word. And this poster here, he begins with, "Reverence for life affords me my fundamental principle of morality, namely that good consists in maintaining, assisting, and enhancing life, and to destroy, to harm, or to hinder life is evil." Schweitzer's journey eventually led him to a very broad, inclusive faith. While he never broke from his Lutheran church of his birth, he did find a spiritual home in more liberal traditions. Reverend George Marshall, the minister of the Church of the Larger Fellowship, the Unitarian Universalist group, began corresponding with Albert Schweitzer in the 1950s. He raised money for Schweitzer's hospital and began to visit him in Africa. Reverend Marshall recalls that when he visited Albert Schweitzer in Africa and stayed on to join the construction gang, Schweitzer would often send for him to visit after supper. They would talk long into the night, sitting on the rough wooden writing table the doctor had built with his own hands on stools without backs, while the insects buzzed about the single kerosene lamp with a green shade that lit the small room. Now and then, the doctor would raise the shade to free a trapped insect. Reverend Marshall said, of course, he knew what ecology was all before the rest of us did. Ecology, that balance of nature and the great chain of life of which we are all parts. He was more concerned about the natural order and man's place in it than any other person who ever lived, I believe. He called it the reverence for life and made it a guiding principle for all living things. In his book, Marshall writes in that Marshall sent to Schweitzer an invitation to join the Church of the Larger Fellowship. And Schweitzer responded, "I thank you cordially for your offer to make me an honored member of the Unitarian Church. I accept with pleasure. Even as a student, I worked on the problem and history of the Unitarian Church and developed sympathy for your affirmation of freedom at a time when it resulted in persecution. Gradually, I established closer contact with Unitarian communities and became familiar with their faith in action principles. Therefore, I thank you that through you, I have been made an honored member of this church. Now, Marshall was particularly concerned as to whether the key word in the original language of Schweitzer's letter, written in French, was honored and not honorary. That's a big distinction. You give someone an honorary membership as kind of a reward for them. But if they become an honored member, that means that they accept you as much as you are honoring them. And that was something important for the Church of the Larger Fellowship. The letter appeared on the cover of the Church Larger Fellowship newsletter, and it caused a rumpus which spilled over into Time magazine. Had Schweitzer, who long felt constrained by traditional Christianity, turned his back on Lutheranism, the religion of his birth? It would not have been surprising, and it would have been news. But Schweitzer made it clear that no, he was not breaking his relationship with the Lutheran Church. He said he could remain in good terms with more than one religion. He clarified his statement in Time magazine on the following December 8th, 1961. Now, I happened to be a student at the University of Chicago Divinity School in 1961, and I remember this was a very hot topic among the students then. Schweitzer stated in an interview with Time, quote, "For a long time now, I have had connections with the Unitarian Church, but there is no question of my breaking with the Lutheran Church. I am a Protestant, but above all, I am a scientist, and as such, I can be on good terms with all Protestant churches." Schweitzer's Unitarian Universalist religious views show the common unity shared in various world religions. Regardless of varying creeds and specific belief systems, we can best get along if we simply share that one common denominator: reverence for life. This philosophy didn't keep him in the jungle. It pushed him out into the world stage. And in the 1950s, alarmed by the atomic arms race, he worked with Albert Einstein, Bertrand Russell, Robert Oppenheimer to mobilize public opinion against nuclear testing. And he used his 1953 Nobel Peace Prize platform to issue, quote, "a declaration of conscience, reminding the world that the spirit of humanism was our only real hope against self-destruction." So, what can this man, who died in 1965 and is buried on the grounds at the hospital of Lambaraini, under a simple cross that he made himself, teach us this year, 2026? I would like to suggest there are two primary lessons. First, we must cultivate a reverence for all life so that we can experience its abiding goodness. We cannot bless a world if we do not truly see this principle in action. Schweitzer would often pause his writing to free an insect trapped in his lampshade. He saw the great chain of life in every small thing. To live with reverence means to stop sleepwalking through our days and attend to the beauty all around us. As the poet Anne Sexton wrote, "The joy that isn't shared, I've heard, dies young." And the second lesson I would suggest is we must find our own Lambaraini. Schweitzer said this in the hospital, that it was an improvisation on the theme of reverence for life. He says everyone can have their own Lambaraini. You don't have to move to the jungle to make your life an argument. You find your Lambaraini whenever you seek a way to serve the goodness at the heart of creation. Whether it's through art, through medicine, through parenting, through social justice, through volunteering at the food pantry, or simply being a presence of peace and justice in a chaotic world. Your service is how you stay faithful in joy. Schweitzer's final challenge to us is this: the only ones among us who will be truly happy are those who have sought and found a way to serve. And so may it be. Now we have a few moments to share dialogue. If anyone wants to mention something, ask me a question, we have this time to do so. He had evidence that there was a historical Jesus, and that the biblical texts he found necessary. But there were also many, many scholars who were investigating the historical Jesus, but also the biblical texts. And when he wrote this book, The Quest of the Historical Jesus, which, by the way, today is still considered by scholars to be one of the most important texts on the study of New Testament history, he used as much, and he learned Greek to do this, New Testament Greek, to do this study. He used a lot of the other scholars, and he describes that at one time in his office at the seminary where he was a professor, the books were piled up of all the other great scholars who had written about Jesus and the New Testament. So, I mean, there are a lot of texts that were used in his study. He was not just doing this on his own. But what he came up with in that final version of the quest was his determination that Jesus didn't understand what it was that he was doing. He misunderstood the eschatology of what was written. And later, members of the Christian community put those documents together, and they always tried to make the best story of where Jesus would be considered the divine son. For Schweitzer, he could not find that evidence in the original texts. So that was radical. In fact, the Mission Society, the Paris Mission Society, said, you cannot go into Africa and try and tell those natives because you are not considered a true believer. You're a heretic. And so he worked it out so that he would only treat them, their physical illnesses, and not do any preaching. Now, the Mark of Cain, that among the in the Lutheran Church, that in for some fundamentalist who take the Bible seriously, the Mark of Cain is a symbol of degradation, especially of those of the darker skin, Africans. And Schweitzer said that was not authentic to the true teachings of Jesus. But there are still fundamentalists, and there are many fundamentalists who would say literally that's still true. But I'm not going to defend that say that it wasn't Schweitzer's belief. The church that he grew up in Gunsbach had both Protestant and Catholics worshiping in the same building, so that there was tolerance among some of the Lutherans to have that kind of connection. Even today, there are liberal Lutherans and there are more conservative. The Missouri Synod Lutheran denomination is much more conservative than the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America. I studied under Dr. Sittler at the University of Chicago, who was a very liberal evangelical Lutheran church, a theologian, and he would be very much in tune with Schweitzer in his more liberal views of Christianity. At the hospital in Lambourine, it says that they did practice a kind of vegetarian diet, but he was not a true vegetarian because he knew it was sometimes necessary because that was a source of food and it had to be considered, otherwise there would be starvation. So he was not truly a vegetarian, but most of the meals that were eaten by the staff at the hospital were vegetarian. That's what I've read. But he was not a strict vegetarian. He did eat meat. Our closing words: Albert Schweitzer was a man of immense complexity and yet held a message of radical simplicity. He teaches us that reason and faith don't have to be enemies. He teaches us that our neighbor includes the trees, the animals, and the people on the other side of the world. And most importantly, he teaches us that if we want to change the world, we shouldn't just talk about our beliefs, we should live them. The power of goodness is not remote or untouchable. It is as close to us as the air we breathe and the music that rises within us. And so may it be.